Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, where'd all the oxygen in the room go? Yeah, there we were. Boner was out there talking about how he was willing to let America go over the cliff. Chinless Mitch Addison, Dr. Turtle McConnell was out there saying, I ain't going to raise no taxes for that one. No. And then boom. The for-profit media forgets that it has the... Well, the for-profit media cannot walk and chew gum at the same time. Because lo and behold, suddenly the news broke that CIA Director General David Petraeus had betrayed his wife. And then, tendered up his resignation as CIA Director because he had a fling. Caught in flagrante delicto, that's Latin for bed. And so everything else just disappeared. The news cycle shifted on this Friday to all Petraeus all the time. What a crock. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. A little experiment ongoing now in its eighth year of what we like to call conversation radio. More long form. More determined to get to the heart of the matter. More determined to give y'all your say. And it's Friday on the front porch. Friday on the front porch, of course, is always handy for things that got overlooked during the week, and we have been hopelessly obsessed with the election, and now, with a chance to start talking about our future well-being, zip, there it goes, lost in a haze of what? Lust and, oh well, you know, I don't care what two people do. But honestly, really, that rockets to the top of the Friday news cycle? A man with a lot of power and a lot of prestige had a fling? So now we can't talk about chitbirds like Addison, Mr. Turtle, Mitch McConnell? And how he's willing to burn the country to the ground to achieve his own nefarious political ends. We can't talk about that in regard to John Boner, the Orange Crush. I guess not. At least not if you're a member of the for-profit media, we can't. Sorry. Yeah, I know, you might have wanted to talk about something else, but... Well, we're gonna talk about something else. No, really, this is The Horn. We're available online, easiest by going to headonradionetwork.com and clicking Listen Live. Secondarily, though, if you wish, you can go to apps or websites that are handy on your smartphone, so you can take The Horn with you anywhere you want to go. Things like TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, DAR.FM, Streama.com. We are available on Roku devices. Yeah, pretty cool. You can get the podcast simply by going and grabbing the feed over at whiterosesociety.org under the Head On with Bob Kincaid subdomain. And it's also available over at, you know, iTunes. It's 5 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch. A gentle reminder that everything that happens on the horn happens because you are determined to keep it going. You share of your time and of your finances to help us reach the $150 a night goal that we struggle for every evening the mic goes hot. We are a little bit behind. I'd say we probably need to raise about $200 tonight just to come even with the week. And that might even be a little on the low side. But we did meet Shirley's challenge last night. So thank you, everyone who has contributed to keep all of this up and running. AM computer is giving me fits. It just doesn't want to play nice. Let's see if we can get a little more cooperation here. I don't know. But yeah, okay. One of these days I'm just going to have to do the damn rebuild. That's all there is to it. You can reach the program this evening, this Friday on the front porch, by dialing 304-658-3333. Or on Skype, you can get into the program by hooking up with Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you have not sent a contact request and you want to get involved that way, well, send one. I'll approve it. I've approved several lately, and we will go from there. I might have to shut down Skype momentarily just to see if I can get things back to some semblance of behavior on the part of this incredibly tired, recalcitrant computer. Sorry. Where to go this evening? Well, I suppose if you want to talk about what the for-profit media are talking about, we can always talk about General Petraeus's apparent affair with his biographer. If you want to. I personally find that about as interesting as talking about, you know, hog belly prices. Well, we can. But I thought it would be far more interesting to take a look at some of the lunacy and outright meanness being perpetrated by right-wingers and the businesses with which they afflict us. We've got an update in the war on coal. Sure enough, you betcha. Oh, God, this is annoying. You know, everything was running fine till I opened my Facebook page here. And then it all went to hell. So let's, it won't affect the ability to do the program. We're just going to do a hard shutdown here. I hate doing that to a computer. But I don't see any alternative. I'll be back in the chat room in a little bit. Now, where to go? Like I said. How about crappy employers? You remember in 2000, after the election had been stolen from Vice President Gore? Do you remember how the right-wingers put out those bumper stickers and were carrying around signs that said, "Sore Loser Man," a play on Gore Lieberman? Well, how are we supposed to know that, in fact, Joe Lieberman was a loser man? But, anyway, it's of little consequence. But, yeah, and they said things like, "Get over it!" Well, it's funny. I guess we don't get to say that. It's only an election fair and square when the right wing either steals it or wins it. And then we're supposed to simply bow our heads and accede to their superior will. Kind of sickening, really. But there it is. Bob Murray. And I'm kind of interested in this story because it first came to light out of a West Virginia newspaper, the Wheeling Intelligencer, which probably, arguably, is an oxymoronic term. No, this has nothing to do with Rush Limbaugh. You remember who Bob Murray is, right? Bob Murray is that coal thug who got no small number of working Americans and their rescuers killed in the Crandall Canyon disaster because Bob Murray is utterly, completely, totally obsessed and consumed by the accumulation of wealth. Well, Bob Murray is right angry. He's angry because, well, we went and reelected that one. And so he sent copy. Man, this guy. Isaac sent this story along to me. Sandra, have you seen the photograph of this guy? If there's been a recent nominee for Needs to Go to Glory, this is him. Remember he screamed at reporters, tried to intimidate them away from pointing out the fact that he was pretty much single-handedly responsible for the deaths of the Crandall Canyon victims? Yeah, he operates the same coal company over in Ohio. The coal company that was used as the miners there were used as human props for Bishop Willard Romney. So he stuck it to a bunch of his miners and blamed President Obama, even though nothing's happened with the economy that would cause him to do it. Not a damned thing. And apparently, his own workers know it. Over on Reddit earlier today, one of the laid-off workers said, of Murray Energy, despite the fact that nothing has changed in the 2 days since the election, they decide to lay off employees. I've seen how corrupt the company can be over the years, and I'm fairly certain the layoffs are just a way to make the president look bad. Because Bob Murray hates that one who lives in our White House. This is, in a word, disgusting. Even more disgusting, though, is the way that Murray went about it. He laid off 54 people at American Coal and 102 at Utah American Energy. Out of a total of about 3,000 employees. They crank out something on the order of 30 million tons of toxic, hateful, vile, poisonous, ability of humans to live on the planet killing coal per year. 30 million is no small number. So, when he wanted to legitimize screwing over his own workers out of nothing but a fit of pique and spite, guess what he did? Guess what he did? Come on. He put it off on God. He published, and you know, shame on the Wheeling Intelligencer for enabling and facilitating this. He published a prayer. Really? Dear Lord, I am not making this up. Dear Lord, the American people have made their choice. They have decided that America must change its course away from the principles of our founders, you know, the ones who owned slaves, and away from the idea of individual freedom and individual responsibility. That's right, those poor souls who were buried alive in the Crandall Canyon mine, they were individually responsible for getting back out, and dadgummit, Bob Murray didn't have nothing to do with it. Away from capitalism, dear Lord, economic responsibility, and personal acceptance. There in the deep, dark bowels of the Crandall Canyon mine, there was more personal acceptance than any of us, one would hope, will ever have to confront. We are a country in favor of redistribution, national weakness, and reduced standard of living, and lower levels of personal freedom. Yeah, see, just 2 days since the election, and Bob Murray's already got less personal freedom. And since the economy runs on a trickle-down basis, when Bob Murray has less personal freedom, even if it is only less personal freedom as he imagines it in the thin gray settlings between his ears that pass for a brain, then it has to trickle down, and his workers, 156 of them, get to share in his reduced personal freedom. Because when you can't make the house payment, your personal freedom goes way the hell down. But Bob Murray can make the house payment. Bob Murray can buy all the groceries he wants. Bob Murray can use dried lobsters to start the fire over which he boils the live lobsters. Bob Murray has enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of wet elephants with sopping wet bales of $100 bills. My regret, Lord, is that our young people, including those in my own family, never will know what America was like or might have been. They will pay the price in their reduced standard of living and most especially reduced freedom. You know, if you have to say this to the Almighty, is there some special conduit that I don't know about from the printed page or the website of the Wheeling Intelligencer to the eyes and ears of great God Almighty? Oh, no. The takers, this portion of the prayer, brought to you by Ayn Rand. The takers outvoted the producers. And we know what the demographic is, right? We know what the demographic breakout of the election on Tuesday was, right? Yeah, I thought so. Obama won women. Latinos, African Americans, educated white males, and Bishop Willard Romney, one cranky old man with hair growing out of their ears. You know, like Bob Murray. The takers outvoted the producers. In response to this, I have turned to my Bible, and in 2 Peter, chapter 1, verses 4 to 9, it says, "To faith we are to add goodness, to goodness knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness kindness, to brotherly kindness love." Well, it seems like a pretty clear statement of how one ought to behave if one buys into that there book, right? I don't see anything in there about taking out your political frustrations on 156 innocent workers. Well, I mean, you know, coal miners. We can discuss innocence later. Lord! This guy's got to be a deacon somewhere. Nobody prays like this except a fundamentalist evangelical deacon. Lord, please forgive me and anyone with me in Murray Energy Corp. For the decisions that we are now forced to make to preserve the very existence of any of the enterprises that you have helped us build. Wait a minute, you mean Bob Murray didn't build that? We ask for your guidance in this drastic time with the drastic decisions that will be made to have any hope of our survival as an American business enterprise. Amen. Say it again. It's another one of those damn moments where I really wish I could believe in any of this baloney. Because if I believed in that great big bearded juvenile delinquent all-seeing, all-knowing, all-powerful zombie in the sky, I'm pretty sure at his age, Bob Murray could not run fast enough to dodge the lightning bolts. Because, see, this isn't a one lightning bolt letter. This is get a handful in one and launch with the other kind of deity pissing off stuff. Honest to God, that the guy quotes something that says, "To faith we're to add goodness, to goodness knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control," and yet he is incapable of all of those. Because he is ruled by hate. Now, if old Second Peter had just added, "And by the way, don't be hating," maybe we'd have something there we could work with. But he didn't, so we don't. Of course, there's always, what is it, Matthew chapter 6? About don't go about praying in the streets as the Pharisees do, for they have their reward. And then there's that other passage about the Pharisee who went up into the temple to pray and said, "Oh, Lord!" Probably sounded a hell of a lot like Bob Murray. "Thank you for not making me all filthy like these sinners. Thank you, Lord, that I am not rotten and vile and nasty like they are. And then Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, tells the story of the bartender, the barkeeper, the tavern keeper, who also went into the temple and said, and could not even raise his face unto the sky, and said nothing more than, "Have mercy on me, O God, a sinner." And we know what Yeshua's opinion was between those two folks. Because he said that the publican, the barkeep, could expect probably a greater measure of mercy from the Almighty than the self-important Pharisee. "Oh, Lord, forgive me and anyone with..." That's kind of preemptive repentance? "Dear Lord, I'm getting ready to just the daylights out of about 156 of my workers, your children. And I'm not just going a little bit, I'm going a lot. I'm going till they hoot. If they open their mouths to holler, you can look down their throats and see me grinning. I mean, Lord, I'm going to screw them, blue them, and tattoo them. Because, Lord, I know you didn't want no brown man looking what looked like your son. Yeah, same skin color and all that. I know, Lord, you didn't want no brown man in your white house what the founders planned out. The takers outvoted the producers." No. And we can thank Paul Ryan for that. We can thank Bishop Willard Romney for that. We can thank him for sleazing up the public discourse until we are not all Americans anymore, that there is some sort of unwritten demarcation, and we've entered this phase of sick right-wing nouveau proto Calvinism in which wealth is the measure of salvation and grace. Come on. If you're there, are you there? If you're there, could you send a sign, God? We know you've got a taste for irony, so if a great big Acme safe or a piano or an anvil or anything was to come right out of the sky and just squish Bob Murray flatter than a flounder, I reckon there's a whole bunch of us that'd be in church on Sunday. Oh, Lord, thank you. And it might put a little bit more starch into that there, what was it, 2 Peter? 1, verses 4 through 9. To faith we are to add goodness. Well, okay, so that equation fails. And to goodness, knowledge. Well, the knowledge that Bob Murray has, the knowledge that he sent people to their graves so he could get a little bit richer, not the kind of knowledge I think we're talking about in that theory equation. To knowledge, we want to be adding self-control. How much self-control do you have when your ego is so monumental that you feel like you're entitled to publish your prayer, which your Savior said you were supposed to make in private, on the pages of a rag from Wheeling, West Virginia? I mean, really? A bit much, isn't it? But he's not the only one. This guy doesn't have the first clue about our history, the principles of our founders. And by the way, he here has the principles, P-R-I-N-C-I-P-A-L-S. I'm sure that was just autocorrect, right? Because I'm sure he knows it should be P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E-S. Not that I'm the language police or anything, but they are two entirely separate words that mean entirely different things. Is he talking about the guys who ran the elementary schools that the founders went to? Oh, wait, there weren't any. Away from the idea of individual freedom and individual responsibility. See, I hate messaging like this. It well and truly pisses me off. Because a lot of us recognize, even though we don't adhere to that zombie religion, we recognize that we do each individually have responsibility for the well-being of our brothers and sisters. Not just in our community, not just in our neighborhood, but in our counties, in our states, in our nation, and yes, on our planet. We recognize this. Upon inquiry, Cain answered, upon being asked, Cain, buddy, where's your brother? Smartass. Am I my brother's keeper? Well, the fairly obvious answer is yes. And we individually recognize these things, and we take what political action we may to manifest that together for the greater good of all of us. Because we are a better nation when mothers don't fear for their ability to feed their children. We are a better nation when a family isn't plunged into hopeless disaster because of an illness to one or both of the so-called breadwinners. We are a better nation when the Bob Murrays of the world don't get to run loose with the bits in their teeth, flecked with foam and with a wild, avaricious fire burning in their beady little eyes. We recognize these things. That ain't all. Oh, no. Lord, counter prayer. And I think I speak here on behalf of everybody within the sound of my voice. Lord, we pray that you don't forgive Bob Murray and the thugs at Murray Energy. Because, Lord, he's filthy rich. He could simply have cut back on his own avaricious acquisition of wealth, and not a single soul in that company would need to have been laid off. But, Lord, he wouldn't do it. So, Lord, if you would oblige us by, plague, fire, flood, frogs, locusts, you know, whatever it is you... Boils worked real good on Job, and Job was the most righteous man under heaven back in the day, right? And you smited the living out of him for no good reason. Well, this guy's just giving you all the reason you could ever possibly want, Lord. So how about you send a whirlwind to Bob Murray? Just to Bob Murray and his executives and his board of directors or whatever the hell he has. It's the biggest privately owned coal operation in the United States, Lord. But in light of what he's done here today, Lord, it needs to be something kind of fast-acting. None of this slow-growing cancer cells somewhere in his body. No, Lord, no. Not that we know better than you, but no, really. No, this needs to be hit by a bus, run over by a train, like I said, you know, the ironic stuff, pianos, anvils, safes. Lord, if you really care about the stuff your apostles taught, it's about time you did something about defending them. Because see, Lord, when he hauled out 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 4 through 9, Lord, well, he hauled it out, printed it up, and then he dropped trow and took a big steaming dump all over your word, Lord. I mean, I guess you could afflict him with hemorrhoids or something. But they'd have to be really, really great big whole entire colon falling out of his ass hemorrhoids, Lord. Otherwise, Lord, if you don't, we're just going to all have to assume that you have devoted the entirety of your considerable power and resources to Sundays and wide receivers and certain evangelical second-string quarterbacks who like to assist with circumcisions in the Philippines, Lord. And that's just not a pleasant thought, Lord. If you know what I mean, and, well, Lord, I kind of have to assume that you do. Merciful heaven. Oh, we got an abundance to work with this evening. Because he's not the only one doing it, Bob Murray. You ever eat at Applebee's? Neighborhood Bar and Grill? Don't go back. Because apparently, look, it's a franchise operation. For instance, there is Applebee's New York, Apple Metro. Owned, CEO'd at least, by Zane Tankel. And he's not real happy that one won the election either. So he's going to punish the people who come to work for him every day and feed folks crappy food. Really. If you've never been to Applebee's, it ain't worth going to find out how crappy. You want to know what he had to say? Zane Tankel showed up on Fox Business News. This is what he had to say. As soon as it loads. See, I can't keep all this stuff queued up or the whole thing just shuts the hell down. Zane Tankel is upset about Obamacare. Yeah.
Take a look at this number, please. $2,000. That is the fine employers with more than 50 workers will have to pay every year per employee if they don't provide health insurance. All because of Obamacare. Now, before the election, our next guest said he might have to move some of his employees from full-time to part-time if President Obama got re-elected. What's he going to do? Joining us now is Zane Tankel.
Oh, now stop it. Wait a minute.
He runs, I think, was it 40...
This is the chain restaurant industry. How many full-time employees does he really have? What we're finding out here is that he's going to game the system and screw more workers, and there won't be any more full-time workers at Applebee's, so he can dodge making sure that they don't drop dead of treatable illnesses.
Obamacare is fascist, socialist, Kenyan, Muslim, anti-colonial...
Two Applebee's franchises.
No, 40.
Sorry. All right, before the election you said, might have to do this, might have to make my full-time people part-time people. All right, we've had the election, the president won, what are you going to do?
We're going to evaluate it. We're going to continue to look at it. We're going to see. Look, business is relatively simple. More money has to come in than goes out.
Who knew that Selma Diamond's maiden name was Tangle?
Man.
Whatever business you're in, we're in a fragile business time, fragile environment. Just adding to overhead doesn't add to GDP, doesn't put cash in the system, doesn't do anything.
So in each Applebee's, how many employees have you got, roughly?
It varies from, I'd say, a minimum of 80 to as many here in Manhattan as 300.
Whoa. So let's take the big one. In Manhattan, 300 employees. You are supposed to give them health care insurance. If you don't, then you face...
Now, okay, there's the first lie. You're supposed to give them insurance. Ain't no giving going on, I'm just saying. It is to be made available so that they may purchase it. And there are vast provisions inside the Affordable Care Act for how the government will then... Oh, never mind.
$600,000 a year in fines.
That's correct.
Now, does that take away all your profitability or a big chunk of it? Or what does it do to you?
Sure it does. I mean, it... Look.
Yeah, sure it does. Not that I got any numbers to back it up, but this is Fox News, and since when did you guys care about any numbers, huh?
There's three ways it has to come back. It's real simple. More efficiencies, reduce overhead, or raise prices. Let's look at each. In this environment, you can't raise prices, particularly in our space. It's not possible. Efficiencies, hopefully we've got all our...
Yeah, because we got all the margin we can get out of the food. I mean, it's the restaurant industry. You know, we're serving stuff that's just one grade above dog food to begin with. You can't raise prices.
Efficiencies. We've just faced three terrible years in the environment and the economy. We've been enforcing and putting more and more in every year. So that
I got an idea, Zane Tankle. What do you say you get busy and you start advocating for universal single-payer health care? That way, we'll all be paying for it equally, the people who come in to eat your marinated dog food and the people who work there serving the marinated dog food will all have something similar to Medicare, and you won't have any health care costs at all. Nah, he's a business genius. That's probably a little too much for him.
And it's cut back on overhead.
So you couldn't, supposing you did provide health insurance, it has to be insurance approved of by the federal government. I got that.
That is correct.
Roughly how much?
That is correct.
For a restaurant with 300 people, roughly how much?
We've calculated it will be some millions of dollars across our system.
Yep.
Some millions. So what does that say? That says we won't build more restaurants, we won't hire more people. Exactly the opposite effect of what the president is.
Then just... pay the $600,000 fine and continue to screw your workers there, Zane. But I'm guessing you, with your shirt halfway unbuttoned and your little chest hair springing out, I can just see you in a club on Friday night with your teeth clenched calling everybody babe. Your big honking, big old honking, great goddamn big gold watch on your arm. Where's a watch anymore? They're on your phone, Zane. But no, that's beyond. That's the thing. We're not, when you talk about people in the world of business, we're not talking about geniuses. You've been in Applebee's, right? One looks like the next one, looks like the next one, looks like the next one. The menu is the same. It's not like there's a hell of a lot of creativity going on there. They're just hustling out the least they can get away with for the most amount of money. Yeah, Fritz is with me there. He says, this guy sounds like a cross between the voices of Dick Toesucker Morris, Harvey Firestein, and Alex Jones. Yeah, that was a little rough on Selma Diamond, wasn't it? Dr. John, by the way, with a Friday observation. Zane Tankle says this, says just adding to overhead doesn't add to GDP.
Now, Dr. John says, I'm no economist, but aren't wages part of overhead? And don't more wages increase purchasing power? And doesn't increased money lead to spending? And spending is done on commodities, which increase GDP? You guys are so smart. It's possible I'm missing something basic, but this looks like another example of these alleged economic geniuses either lying about the economy or now knowing that or not knowing that much about the economy. All they know is how to suck up money and not pass much out. Tim and Andy passed along. Yeah, this is there is an absolute snit going on in this country because they were so sure they were going to win and they had everything lined up to just screw us to the wall. And now they don't get to. And they go, well, by God, we're going to do it anyway. Andy noting there's also a story out there on the airwaves of a Las Vegas, Nevada businessman that laid off 22 employees today. He's talking about it on the airwaves, but not giving his name or the name of his business, because like most Repig Lickens, he's a coward. I believe he said he has about 150 employees and says he can't afford the adoption of the Affordable Care Act. He can't afford the new costs and to have that many people employed at the same time. I wonder if a backward state, i.e. Nevada, has even come close to initiating the Affordable Care Act. Seems quite early in the process to be blaming Mr. Obama, but yet again, when you're a Repig Lickin', there is no connection between reality and what comes out of the blowhole that many of us use for logical communication from a mind that can reason. Instead, we get baloney, propagandy from the reptile mind, the lizard brains. I added lizard brains, the amygdalas. Big, 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 big with the tangles of the world, that amygdala. Or wait, is that amygdala? Is that gonna be Luke Skywalker's granddaughter, amygdala Sky? I don't know. But Andy is of course correct. Nevada isn't anywhere near implementing the Affordable Care Act. The exchanges aren't even up and running. The 16th of November. That's the reason you're seeing all this stuff. The 16th of November is the drop dead date for states to declare they will have their own insurance exchanges, or they will rely on the federal government to do one for them. So naturally, earlier today, why, I got a right-wing blast email from Nicole Kading of Americans for Prosperity HQ. Governors should seize momentum to reject health insurance exchanges. Today, Americans for Prosperity, the nation's largest and most effective advocate for economic freedom. I guess you can just say crap like that because there are no truth in advertising laws. Released the following statement calling on governors to reject the state-based health insurance exchanges.
Governors should join the growing chorus in sending a strong message to Washington that their states will not implement these flawed health insurance exchanges, said Nicole Kading, AFP state policy manager. Exchanges raise prices on consumers and increase taxes on hard-working families.
Seeing as there aren't any, how the hell do they know?
Oh, we have statistical models.
Oh, you mean like the ones that said that Barack Obama was going to win re-election?
Oh, shut up.
Multiple governors have announced this week that they will not create an exchange. This list now includes Rick Scott, Florida, Piyush Bobby Jindal, Louisiana, Sam Brownback of Kansas, Rick Perry of Texas, Nikki Haley of South Carolina, Nathan Deal of Georgia, Robert McDonald of Virginia, and Jay Nixon, Missouri. AFP applauds these governors.
It is encouraging to see governors taking this step to protect their residents and health care freedom in their states. AFP applauds.
They do a lot of applauding over at AFP.
The principled stance of these governors, Kading said.
There's only one itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy, tiny little problem here. And that is, if they refuse to set up their state exchanges, that means the big bad federal government's going to come in and do it for them. They're going to have one.
What a night. And we ain't even into it yet. Because there's more. Chompin' Jehoshaphat. Let's go back to Mr. Tankle.
Do you feel under pressure to move to a more part-time workforce as other restaurants are doing because of Obamacare?
Look, the model's been set. I don't want to, I'm sure all our people are watching this right now, so I don't want to make any commitments one way or another. I want to simply say we're looking at it, we're evaluating it. If it's possible to do without cutting people back, I'm delighted to do it. But that also rolls back expansion. It rolls back hiring more people. And in a best-case scenario, we only shrink the labor force minimally.
Any way you best slice case. It. Any way you slice it.
See, there's an essential problem here. He makes it sound like, yeah, I got the Stuart Barney says, and you've got, what, two restaurants? You know, he sounds like Stewie from Family Guy. And Tankle said, no, I got 40. I got 40. And he makes it sound as if he's expanding Applebee's restaurants as some sort of charity of the workforce. Oh, yeah, I'm a job creator. Bullshit. He expands restaurants because it makes him wealthier. You know, there is a real easy way for the workforce at Applebee's to protect themselves. Strike. Stand up for yourselves. Join a union. Demand full-time wages. And, you know, see what this hard ass has to say then.
If you offer insurance, if you don't offer insurance and pay the fine, your overhead's gone up. No way around.
You just took something from the bottom line, which we use for ideally expansion, hiring, extending.
Yeah, from the bottom line, which ideally we use for expanding my wallet, buying my Porsche, getting that $15,000 shower curtain that my wife wants so much.
Modeling restaurants. We're building a green restaurant right now. It's going to open in 3 weeks on 117th Street in Harlem, which will be a model for the industry. Gather rainwater, compost garbage. It'll cost us in excess of $4 million. Last one we built for the next 4 years.
Is this the most challenging time you've ever seen?
It is. It is. And
because of the regulations?
All the regulations.
But they haven't kicked in. How can he know whether he's challenged or not? Well, I got this here crystal ball, see. I bought it down at the Bowery.
DOL.
Magic beans. There's a guy down there with magic beans every day. I buy some every day.
And what concerns me, frankly, David, is I was watching the news last night and I heard the president of the United Steelworkers Union, and it sounded like he just invaded Benghazi and won. It was the ground game that won, and we showed that money can't do it. And it was.
Wait, am I to understand that the steelworkers represent the workers at Applebee's? What, Edith? Texas Betsy pointing out most trenchantly, most New York City regulations come from New York City. See, here's the problem. He doesn't provide health care. He doesn't make health care available, even as a deduction from the worker's own salary. But they are, as so many of us are, too rich for Medicaid. I don't know if he thought that green restaurant was going to be a selling point at Fox, but if he did, he hasn't been watching.
It's truly a declaration of war. I had and have...
Wait. A what? A who?
If it is, I was watching the news last night, and I heard the president of the United Steelworkers Union, and it sounded like he just invaded Benghazi and won. It was the ground game that won, and we showed that money can't do it, and it was truly a declaration of war. I had an...
No, a declaration of war, doofus, Zane, sounds like this. We declare war! It truly was a declaration of war. That word, truly. Troubling word. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Nor I.
Have a lot of hope for the president, as you do Slimmer, a little more than Slimmer, because he's all of our presidents today.
Right.
But what's his obligation to his constituency who did that ground game, declared that war, and won?
Yeah, the war that wasn't declared. He owes noogies to people who declared a war who didn't declare a war. How will he ever pay them off?
And these guys
think
are
they'll be even right. Further to the left than he was the first term?
Further to the left? Further to the left? You see, the same fulminations that made it, oh, absolutely, the bishop's going to win. It's going to be a landslide. That's the same inside-the-bubble belief system that comes up with this notion that he's this wild-eyed Marxist who whistles the Internationale in his sleep. Jesus. To the left.
I think he's got to sit down and he's got to get in a closet, a dark closet. He's got to use the White House to make friends, forget about dinner with Malia and his wife and all the kids, invite the various parties over to the White House, use that asset, as previous presidents have done, have them for dinner, instead of quitting and going to dinner with the families. The president...
What the... So he can't take his family to dinner at Applebee's, Mr. Tankle? Is that what you're saying? Philip with a little note. My pitiful prayer. I know this is unusual, maybe even odd that I write to one whom I doubt exists, O God. However, the reality is that if you exist, I now plead with you to make quickly desist the cranks, the fools, the reactionaries who holler and with him and with whom, unfortunately, I share a color. They've had their way for 30 miserable years. Please compel them now to drown their miserable tears by quenching their gullets with Adolf Coors beers, to which I can only add adieu and cheers, and make them forever silent as we progress. But if you find them in great pain and distress, think about taking them prematurely to dwell in the pits of that eternal coal mine, hell, where they'll surely and quickly be taken aback by their change to that one's color, you know, black. Sadly, Lord, in this rambling poetic distortion, I long for the day of postnatal abortion, to protect the lives of the children now born from those who will be forever forlorn, that the idiot they imagined to ride a white horse now sadly joins them in their desperate remorse. I profanely thank you for retiring old Mitt, who would have immersed us in 4 years of shit. And don't forget your servant Bob, who reads this crap with the patience of Job. Okay, we got a problem here, Philip. I've either got to be Bob, or Job's got to be Job. You sort it out. And Lord, I'm broke and can't now contribute, so keep the horn afloat as you deem fit. I thought about not signing my name to this pitiful rhyme. I wasn't going to let you get away like that, Philip. I mean, come on. In all seriousness, Philip says, employer crap, translation. So what they're really saying is that they can't afford to insure their employees so they can remain healthy by having access to health care while they squeeze them for every last bit of productivity.
In my book, we call that wage slavery. So, again, that ain't all there is of this conniption. It goes on and on. This is the story of Hardin County, Texas, Republican Treasurer Peter Morrison. He puts out a newsletter, Peter does. And Peter wants him an amicable divorce. Here it comes. Here it comes. You knew it couldn't be long, right? Amicable divorce. We must contest every single inch of ground and delay the baby-murdering, tax-raising socialists at every opportunity. But in due time, the maggots will have eaten every morsel of flesh off of the rotting corpse of the Republic, and therein lies our opportunity. Texas was once its own country, and many Texans already think in nationalist terms about their state. We need to do everything possible to encourage a long-term shift in thinking on this issue. Why should Vermont and Texas live under the same government? Let each go her own way in peace, sign a free trade agreement among the states, and we can avoid this gut-wrenching spectacle every 4 years. You want the punchline? I don't think you do, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. State Board of Education Chairman in Texas, Don McElroy, chose Mr. Morrison here to screen the state's public school textbooks. See, we've heard this language before. Let each go her own way in peace. But we have to sign a free trade agreement among the states. No, I think, Mr. Morrison, if you want to go, you're going to... No. You don't get no free trade agreement, baby. And I think there's going to be more than a few people who are going to be a little bit put out with you because your state ain't nearly as red as you think it is. You're looking at your neck and thinking it's a representation of the state of Texas. The hell did Vermont ever do to Peter Morrison? It's out there. You know, Rick Perry was battling secession a couple of years ago. They want it. They've been yearning for it. Makes you wonder what it'd look like, doesn't it? Pull out every federal installation, take out every tank, every Humvee, close down every military base, pull out every dollar of federal funding that Texas gets, and give it all to Vermont! And since they're so fond of fences, we'll build a fence around them. And if you've ever read that really harrowing chapter of Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove, we'll fill the Red River back up with cottonmouths, lest any Peter Morrisons of the world want to get across. Hmm.
Wouldn't surprise me a dime's worth, Betsy. You think this guy or his family's on Social Security? I'm sure he's counting on his Medicare. Bet he drives to work every day on them government roads that Texas couldn't even begin to dream of paving without getting at $3 back or so for every dollar they put into the federal government. Yeah. Going back to Stuart Varney's interview of Zane Pankel, Jan over in the UK notes, the English person who is asking the questions will have used the health service here in UK when living here, and I bet many of his relatives are still doing so. Hmm? Yeah. Stuart Varney is a refugee from CNN who let his real right-wing flag fly when he went to Fox. I bet he has to work to hang on to the accent. But it makes him sound more businesslike. All right? These people are downright cranky. Bad. But really, I don't know. I don't know if anybody can compete with this clown. Beth, in Texas, put me on to Eric Dondero. Eric, really, no, my last name isn't Cartman Dondero. Eric Dondero is a proud Republican libertarian, an alumnus of Florida State University. And he's right upset that one's still going to be in our White House. Yes, he is. Eric Dondero says, In the wake of the aftermath, or the aftermath of the election, in the wake of the election, pick one, Bob, come on. It sounds like he wants the same divorce that Peter Morrison wants, but he has no interest in the amicable part. He wrote and went viral over it. His Facebook page just blew up. Express your hatred, shame, and outright disgust with anyone you know who voted Democrat. However, for me, I'm choosing another rather unique path. A personal boycott, if you will. Starting early this morning, I'm going to unfriend every single individual on Facebook who voted for Obama, or I even suspect may have had Democrat leanings. I will do the same in person. All family and friends, even close family and friends, who I know to be Democrats are hereby dead to me. I vow never to speak to them again the rest of my life, or have any communications with them. They are, in short, the enemies of liberty. They deserve nothing less than hatred and utter contempt. I strongly urge all other libertarians to do the same. Are you married to someone who voted for Obama? Have a girlfriend who voted O? Divorce them. Break up with them without haste. Them? Them? What, is this directed to the Mormon population? Vow not to attend family functions, Thanksgiving dinner, or Christmas, for example, if there will be any family members in attendance who are Democrats. Do you work for someone who voted for Obama? Quit your job. Co-workers who voted for Obama? Simply don't talk to them in the workplace unless your boss instructs you for work-related only purposes. Have clients who voted Democrat? Call them up this morning and tell them to take their business elsewhere.
That's ELSEWHERE apostrophe S.
Have a neighbor who votes for Obama? You could take a crap on their lawn. Then again, probably not a good idea since it would be technically illegal to do this. Just technically, not actually. Adverb problems. But you could have your dog take care of business. Not your fault if he just happens to choose that particular spot. Spot. Get it? Spot. Fido. Spot. And start your boycott of your Democrat friends and family today, like this morning. First thing you can do, very easy, is to unfriend all Democrats from your Facebook account. You know they probably weren't even sharing your Facebook post anyway.
Get a net. I mean, this guy went huge. So much so that he was interviewed all over creation. New York Magazine interviewed this goober. And he expanded upon his, shall we say, newfound philosophy. Whew. Did you know that right before he was murdered, on December 8th, 1980, right before he was murdered, John Lennon converted to Reaganism? Really? Not kidding. Yeah, because he didn't want to listen. He won't listen to any of that liberal music either. I've never seen the likes of this. New York Magazine interviewed Eric Dondero and had some questions for him. These are fun. It is, after all, Friday on the front porch, and we can have fun like this. New York Magazine said, let's say you lose your dog and a neighbor who's a Democrat finds it and brings it back to you. Do you thank him or spit on the ground in front of him? Tell him to give me my dog and get off my property. And the next time he sees my dog, to just let her be. As he's walking away, I might yell out, "Obama sucks!" a couple of times. Here's a tough one. You find out that the quarterback of your favorite football team, which you have been rooting for since childhood, is a Democrat. Do you start rooting for a different team? I don't listen to music by Democrats anymore. Wait, what? The football question. I try to do some research on the political leanings of those I listen to. Oingo Boingo called themselves libertarians in the early 1980s. I listened to them. Neil Peart of Rush called himself an Ayn Randist a couple of times. I love Rush. I like pro-British patriot Frank Turner out of the UK. The Guardian did a big interview with him over the summer, and he said he was a libertarian. And, of course, there's always Ted Nugent and Kiss, both hardline right libertarians. Marshall Tucker Band, Kid Rock. Did you know lead guitarist for Steely Dan is also a rightist? The Lieutenant Dan Band, Madison Rising is great, Metallica and Motorhead have expressed right leanings in interviews. Where's the football part? I was really interested in the football question. I like football. Yeah, honestly, it doesn't always work. I miss sometimes. But if Springsteen or some other leftist America hater comes on my SiriusXM channel and I can get to the dial fast enough, I will switch it. Elton John is a toughie. You know he leans left, but he made friends with Rush Limbaugh, of all people, last year, so I give him a pass. Oh, and the Beatles had that classic Taxman. John Lennon's personal aide in his last few weeks of life was interviewed last year, and said that he turned into a Reaganite in the last few months before he was killed. Isn't that ironic? I wouldn't use ironic. I'm not a sports fan. Oh, okay, so finally the question gets answered. So all I can do is answer this question from a musical taste perspective. Hope that helps. Here's something else you can sink your teeth into. Related, I honestly do this, and I've been doing this for years. You know that silly fist bump thing? When my coworkers or friends try that with me, I extend my full hand for a traditional handshake. I tell them, sorry, but I don't do that Obama thing. Most of them chuckle, but some have gotten offended, look at me strangely. But they know where I stand right off the bat. And it helps me to weed out the good guys, freedom lovers, from the bad guy, Democrat fascists. There's more. A Democratic family member leaves a message on your answering machine. He says he just discovered who your real father is and asks you to call him back. Do you? Interesting. I know my real bio dad. I was adopted in New York City, as a matter of fact, so this has some direct relevance. He's an independent Perot type. To your question, yes, if he's a Democrat family member, I just would simply refuse to call him back regardless. A Democratic family member is dying of cancer. He wants you to come visit him in the hospital, which is within walking distance, before he passes. Do you go, no? Read my original piece. I'm done with any and all Democrats in my life for good. And trust me on this, I've just had a pretty intense experience with someone close to me today, someone I've known since childhood. It's hard for me not to respond to this person. Very, very hard. But so far, I've held. If there's one person out there who I would break down my rule for, it is this person. Lifelong friend. East Coast, in fact. It's been 24 hours, and I'm still holding strong. This person read the original piece I wrote. The email response from this individual in my inbox. I almost responded twice today. Even started writing the reply. But I pulled back. I'm truly hoping that this person sends me an email with the following message in the subject line. I have left the Democrat Party and will never vote Democrat again. You require a risky and complicated brain surgery, one that is performed only by two neurosurgeons in the country. One's a Republican and the other's a Democrat, but the Republican is generally unknown, and the Democrat was just heralded by Time magazine as the nation's best neurosurgeon. Everything else, the cost, location, etc., is the same. Which doctor do you choose? Simple. Avoid them both. Go to Mexico for your medical treatment. Avoid all the red tape and bureaucracy. You come upon a neighbor, whom you know to be a Democrat, drowning in a lake. You're the only person in the vicinity. Do you help him? Phew. Now that one's really, really tough. I honestly do not have an answer for that one. You could always be a smartass about it, I suppose. Scream, hey Joe, you sure you're a Democrat? Just say the word Obama sucks. Simple as that. Just mouth the words Obama sucks and I'm in the water. A close Democratic family member is hanging off the side of a cliff. A Republican who is also an admitted child molester is also nearby hanging off the side of the same cliff. They both have but seconds until they plummet to their deaths and you only have time to save one. Whom do you save? Man, you're good. I guess I asked the Democrat again to yell out, Obama sucks! And I'll be there in a jiffy to lend him a hand, pun intended. Republican child molester? I tell him to join that asshole Sandusky, Ed Savitz, and that former Philly DA Ed Rendell who covered up for Savitz and a whole shitload of other Democrat child molesters in southeast Pennsylvania all these years in hell. Is this just crazy inducing? Yeah, you're right, Irish Dave. He left out meatloaf. They have lost what little bit passed for their minds. Philip pointing out, I find it curious that those who wrapped themselves in the flag and the Constitution during the campaign while denouncing the rest of us as socialists now want to secede. Geez, so that's how one defines what real patriotism is and love of country. They wouldn't know a socialist if they met one, but or if one bit them in the ass, and I've too few teeth to make it painful enough to be worthwhile. All that hate now having no access to the White House, how very sad. So much for we the people.
You remember the Virginia Democratic or Republican Party newsletter that called for violent revolution if Obama was reelected? Yeah, we do silly stuff on Friday on the front porch. But God Almighty, this is past silly. Need I remind you that these people are dangerous? That they are heavily armed? That they are out of control of their faculties, and that every day their little skulls are opened up and all kinds of poison are poured directly into their minds via people like Beck and Hannity and Savage is gone. That's nice. Flush Flimball. Neil Bortz is retiring, but Neil Bortz and Laura Ingraham and the rest of that filthy lot, and then all the second tier and third tier and 52nd tier right-wing yabblers. Watch your ass. You never know when you're standing next to Eric, no, really, my last name isn't Cartman Dondero. You just don't know. Although if you stand still and be quiet long enough, you will hear them begin to babble, you know, you'll hear the word socialist. You know, most socialists don't talk about socialism. They talk about the rights of working people. You're almost guaranteed that if you hear the word socialist out and about, you're dealing with a right-winger. But they're only going to get weirder, because these are the bellows of a soon-to-be extinct species that has wandered into the tar pit. Right? Yeah. So yeah, I guess these things seem like maybe they're funny, and we have our giggles. There's one. Thank you, Sandra. General Petraeus standing in front of the Stars and Stripes with his little army costume on, with all the hardware, shaking the hand of the woman that he apparently had a relationship with. And she looks just a little bit stressed out, don't you think, Sandra? Yeah. I don't know what to make of this bunch. What would it take to make them happy? Well, what it would take to make them happy is that we have to do as they say. Meanwhile, there really is stuff to worry about. Out of yesterday's New York Times, a developing story. The New York Times reported Iranian warplanes shot at an American military surveillance drone flying over the Persian Gulf near Iran last week. Later reports I read said that they shot it down. And inside this little bit of professional journalism, there's the question, what does flying over the Persian Gulf near Iran mean? Were they flying in Iranian airspace? Near the territorial waters? Do we even believe that? In the midst of the right-wing hissy, we must bear in mind that there are a lot of right-wing weirdos out there who absolutely have a tingle up their pants leg for war with Iran. Oddly enough, they're the same ones who had that same tingle for war with Iraq, war with Afghanistan, war with anybody they can have a war with. Now, we do have a history of violating Iranian airspace to spy on them. That's how it was they were able to shoot down that one spy plane last year. The Pentagon apparently is trying to keep something resembling a cool head. Citing a senior administration official, New York Times said this incident should not be viewed as a precursor to a broader military confrontation with Iran. We view the incident as problematic, but we're wary of the possibility of unintended escalation. They're claiming now that they shot at the drone but missed. The Pentagon also says our aircraft was never in Iranian airspace. It was always flying in international airspace. Then again, there's the question of why the hell is that necessary? But, you know, that's kind of complicated and stuff. Damn, look at the clock. Where's all this time going? We're about we're halfway through the program. You know, this is Conversation Radio. I'm sorry about the toll-free number, but we have not yet worked our way around the hostage impasse where the toll-free number is being held hostage in exchange for a bill that we don't think is due. Just so you'll know. So let's take a little break. And light up the phones. You know, there's two different ways you can get involved with the program. I may have screwed up here. Here we go. Yeah, let me make sure we get signed into Skype. There we are. All better now. The Skype address is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn, if you want to get in that way. The traditional telephone line number is 304-658-3333. Rather simple, really. Well, I tell you what, never mind the break. Let's go straight to the phones. Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra.
Bob.
Hey.
Hey, the Petraeus stuff is just so weird. I mean, you know, the guy completely destroys a country, but he's going to resign because of some slap and tickle?
Yeah, it does seem a little bit weird.
There must be more to it.
Well, there has been, since I first heard about it, there's been some mumbling that the FBI is now involved.
Oh, see, that's what I'm saying. It has to be, come on. I mean, the whole enterprise is full of criminals, so why in the hell would he go away because of that?
The only thing you can guess about, Sandra, is that this involves, that the intelligence services are forever worried about blackmail and things that could compromise the intel. Is this a case of pillow talk? Might she have been some Paula Broadwell, apparently is her name. Might she have been some sort of agent? You know, we don't know. That's purely speculation.
Oh, well, I mean, I guess, you know, it just seems really pedestrian in the face of, you know, how the U.S. is a bit of a rogue state now, and this just seems really minor compared to some of the horror stories that are obviously going on. You know what I mean? So I'm just I'm just curious, because he was, Obama and his relationship with the generals are a bit strained, aren't they? Isn't this the second general to go?
I think it is. And, you know, the other thing, and this is because I'm a paranoid maniac, what do you reckon is going to be the topic of discussion on all the Sunday babblehead shows now? It won't be the so-called grand bargain, will it? It won't be the over the cliff or decoupling or any of the other Orwellian terms they're using. No, hell no. It'll be the nefarious affair of David Petraeus and Paula Broadwell.
Oh yeah, no. This is just ready made for the lame media, of course. But speaking of that cliff business. Hey, did you see, Boner? I mean, what planet are these people on? He sounds like he's about to fall over dead.
Dead drunk, maybe.
I mean, the smoking voice. I mean, it was all a bit of a horror show when I was looking at him. I'm like, dude, why don't you just give it to Eric Cantor and just call it a day? Just get on, you know?
I think if Eric Cantor was maybe... two steps closer to sane, Boner might think about that, Sandra. But if anybody on this earth knows what a weirdo Eric Cantor is, probably more so than the White House suspects, probably more so than anybody in the Democratic caucus thinks, John Boner knows what a freak Eric Cantor is.
Well, I mean, he certainly is breathing down his neck, though, which is why I think... I guess we might just tumble over that cliff, because I don't see these freaks, budging an inch.
Well, they've... let's talk for a minute about the cliff itself, then. I've read these dire predictions. You know, even Krugman said, well, yeah, if we go over the cliff, we might go back into recession. But he tendered that, Sandra, with a but. You know, but it is not worth giving away the kind of stuff that the Republicans want given away in order to get a deal.
No, but see, unfortunately for Krugman, he's acting as if Obama is some sort of adversary to what they want to give away. This is my problem with Krugman's article. It's like, you know, you might want to step back and throw Obama in with the rest of them, because he will wash cars and walk dogs of the Republicans in order to get this deal done. Okay? He said he would wash Boner's car and walk Miss McConnell's dog.
Jesus Christ, I missed that one.
Miss McConnell, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I caught that.
Yeah, so that's what he said in the interview. So, and the meanwhile, anybody with just a cursory understanding... all you have to do is just do nothing. Just let them expire. Come back in January. Well, we want to offer this tax cut to 98% of Americans and nothing for the rich, and watch the Republicans further implode. Now, the Democrats have a tendency to snatch defeat
from the jaws of victory. Absolutely.
Right, because that's all that they have to do. And if they don't do something like that, then you know that it's a rigged setup, that gutting the safety net is the plan of the elite. Because the elite consensus, instead of as soon as this man was reelected, I didn't hear jobs. No, I'm hearing deficits, which is disgusting, because the majority of people, they're not waking up and saying, oh, my God, the deficit. They're waking up and saying, oh, my God, my house is underwater and I don't have a fucking job.
Yeah, how am I going to make the payment?
And if you take care of Obama, that's why I don't trust him. If you take care of the job situation, that will take care of the deficit problem.
You would think, yes.
No, you get people jobs, the tax base expands and increases, the deficit is paid. You let the Bush tax cuts expire, you get 3% more revenue coming into the government. We go back to Bill Clinton's level of taxation, which is barely anything.
Well, what's driving me three shades of crazy, Sandra, is as between the two parties, it looks an awful lot like the Republicans won the election, because they're out there, you know, whether it's chinless Addison Mitch McConnell
or whether it's Boehner or Cantor, they're the ones that are out there dictating damn terms.
Right, talking about how, you know, and then the Karl Roves of the world, talking about how, oh, Obama has to, you know, meet them halfway or some BS, and it's like, well, wait a minute. He hasn't, a president hasn't had this kind of mandate since 1984.
Nope.
He's won 50%. We haven't had a Democrat win 50% since what? FDR?
Probably, yeah.
You know, I'm just saying. So, no, I'm just sort of, and to me, I just shake my head at the idea that it's Obama with this sort of win. Because what am I supposed to do? I can only look at how he's governed the last 4 years. And the fawning needs to stop over the tear he shed. And people need to get off their ass and get on it. Because he said over and over again he needs and wants to deal with entitlements. So all these Van Hoople people and all these other progressives who are fawning over him crying at some damn... I'm like, I don't care about that bullshit.
No, I read a pretty fascinating little piece of commentary in all of that unscripted thank you stuff. I think it was Taylor Marsh who pointed out, and I frankly don't know where she stands or anything, but she pointed out that in all of that talk, he never said Democratic Party not once.
And right. He's a corporate technocrat, and you're gonna see his true colors. You know, and if I'm wrong, I'll be glad to be wrong. I don't care.
I get it. I'd like to say, nah, it's obvious you're wrong, Sandra, but I don't think it is obvious that you're wrong. He has at this point in time still a fully mobilized machine that can be put to work at once. You know, let's say 100,000 people on the lawn in front of the Capitol screaming, decouple.
Yeah, no, I mean,
because I mean, just based on some of that, and you know, I wasn't just putting that out there to be silly. Based on some of this craziness that you're getting from Bob Murray and that Zane Pankel creep and this goober who's unfriending all of his right-wing Facebook friends and the guy in Texas who wants to secede, they are incapable of mobilizing right now. But Barack Obama has a machine that can be mobilized on a moment's notice. And
he can use an organization that got him elected yet again. If he wants to use the bully pulpit and say, listen here, this is what we need to do, and get the people to a marshal, just like you said. But all I hear him talking about is needing to cross the aisle, wanting to meet with these freaks. I don't even understand why he's doing that. He needs to come out and say, either you let the Bush tax cuts expire for the above $250,000, or I'm going to let the thing go over the cliff. That's what the Republicans did to him. They didn't bat an eye.
Well, exactly, and to a certain extent, I mean, he did say that he will veto any bill that comes to his desk that does not include a tax increase on the wealthiest Americans. But that is different from saying, I'll let this, and I hate this imagery, I'll let this thing go over the cliff. Again, this is one of those moments where the sun's not going to come, is not going to fail to appear in the sky.
Well, he can just say, I'll let the Bush tax cut expire and we can come back in January. That's less incendiary language.
That's the other word that I find disturbing, this decouple. This stuff is not coupled in the first place. There's no contingency out there that says we can only let the Bush tax cuts expire if fill in the blank.
No, we don't have to. No, they're due to sunset. It's only because of him and his deal that we have them for two more years anyway.
Right.
You know, I mean, all of it is just, you know, it's just a bit of a worry because the solution is pretty straightforward, and he has the people behind him because, let me tell you something, you could have knocked my ass over, but, you know, California is turning into a one-party state, and that party is a Democrat. They have destroyed. The Republican Party here has been annihilated because California expanded the franchise, and looky here, all these students and all these young people said, oh, hell no, you're going to tax them motherfuckers because I want my schools. Pretty basic. So all these young people came out and voted to tax the rich in here. So now California is taxing the rich. I bet they don't go nowhere.
Would you leave California for Mississippi, Stan, if you were rich?
Well, it's just the same old dogma. I mean, they've been laid. I mean, we're now looking at the end of Prop 13, because not only did they pass Prop 30, they got a super majority in both houses now, Bob.
Yes, they do.
And it's just like, hello? And listen, how fucking good is Jerry Brown looking right about now? That boy can play. I have to give him credit. All credit in the world. I had no idea it was that kind of party. He is ruthless. He is ruthless. And after he won this, he just said, well, we need to do this and that. He didn't take a victory lap. He didn't do nothing. He went straight to the next plan. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm a believer, and I will say nothing against you again. Because he played these MFers. They've done.
Well, and that's one of the things I don't understand, and I don't understand it on a national level, Sandra. You've got that happening in California, and obviously there's a dynamic there that is not in play in other states. But, for instance, here where I live, I was talking to Boss Man Wayne earlier today, and, you know, we had a down-ballot bloodbath here. You had people voting straight ticket Republican because they hated Obama. Now, for some reason or another, we still managed to keep Blanche Manchin and Earl Ray Tomlin and a slim majority in the House and a slim majority in the Senate, but literally a carpetbagger from New Jersey who was a lawyer for Big Pharma who was admitted to the West Virginia bar 4 days before he filed for office, won the office of Attorney General, and is now out there dictating terms of what he will and won't do as Attorney General, and has no clue what the duties, the constitutionally expressed duties of the Attorney General are. That's just one example. We got another Republican on our Supreme Court.
Wait, is he a lawyer?
Yeah, he's a lawyer, but you have to be admitted to the bar in West Virginia to be Attorney General.
And he hasn't been.
He was only admitted to the West Virginia bar 4 days before he filed to run for office last January.
And when you get admitted to the bar there, is that a test or is it a sort of flip a coin? I mean, what's the situation?
Well, we have reciprocity. So if you've practiced for 5 or more years, then in the discretion of the state bar, they can admit you on reciprocity.
Okay, so you don't need to be in the bar to practice?
Yeah, oh yeah, you've got to be in the bar. You've got to be a member of the bar. That's why he had to be admitted to the bar.
Oh, so he just was a lawyer, but he wasn't practicing.
No, he was a lawyer from somewhere else. He worked in, he was from Jersey,
okay.
But he worked in D.C. for Big Pharma and was one of these tort reform goons.
Oh, okay. I guess I missed the New Jersey part. I got you now.
And there was, you know, there were other states where there were whippings down ballot. I mean, I was just talking to some friends in Wisconsin the other day. And Obama obviously won Wisconsin, but lo and behold, the state house has flipped entirely into the hands of the Republican Party in both the House and the Senate. Obviously, Scott Walker is still there.
Oh yeah, no, I
mean, there is some weirdness going on.
No, I read that about Wisconsin. I was just thinking, oh my God, you know, so he's gonna, you know, so he's gonna be able to go to town yet again on those poor people.
Oh yeah, he's got the bit in his teeth, and you don't know how much in the way of resources anybody on the other side has to fight this stuff with. They've got one of the strongest environmental laws in the 50 states up there, and that's the first thing the right wing is gonna come after because they want to blast the shit out of northern Wisconsin.
Well, you know, I still think that as this election is turning out to represent is a major shift in demographics because, well, all of a sudden New Mexico is just a blue state. You know, I was like, huh? You know, so there's some in Colorado. I mean, what's going on there?
It's all demographics, isn't it?
Yes, all demographics is what I mean. It's sort of, you know, I mean, and if you want to go in four-year cycles, Texas is going to be blue up in here pretty soon. No way it cannot be.
Yeah, well, look, there were several new districts created in Texas, and they only won one of them? The Republicans did? As Edward was chuckling about, you know, Dallas has gone full blue.
Yeah, and it looks like, I mean, I know Romney won Mississippi, but it wasn't as great as one might think. I just think that the Republican Party, hence Boehner, what was the second word out of his mouth? Immigration reform. Them motherfuckers need, they know what time it is.
Yeah, they do. And even on election night, after the race had been called, lo and behold, you had these right-wing freaks saying, oh, well, you know, 2016, oh, no, it was the day after because I had kind of a conniption. They were already talking about the 2016 race, and everybody they named as a potential Republican challenger or a potential Republican nominee was Hispanic, whether it was Marco Rubio or Susana Martinez or, well, you get the idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, a month earlier, Lindsey Graham closet case was saying, oh, we don't have enough angry white men to sustain this party. I mean, you know, some people in that party, they know what is going on. But if Obama, after deporting all these people, is still able to get, what did he get, 71% of the Hispanic vote? I mean, it's just outrageous. You know, when you start scratching the surface in certain parts of the country, the Republicans, as a party, they're kind of in trouble, I think.
Well, they are, and that's why you find out that lo and behold, they're already, and you know, I've said it on this program sometimes, you know, half smart alecky, but it's true. They don't take a year off, even if they get the hide blistered off of them. They're working on the plan for the very next day for the very next cycle, and so lo and behold. The Secretary of State Husted in Ohio is already out there trying to make sure that Ohio 2012 does not happen in Ohio 2016. He's out there trying to rig the vote. And,
yeah, I mean,
I was just going to say that, you know, when Obama said in his victory speech, oh, by the way, and we've got to work on that.
Yeah.
I mean, that meant something.
I don't really understand why it takes election after election for the Democrats to sort of realize that the integrity of the vote is kind of important. And I was mortified just to see the long lines. I'm like, well, what is this? You know, why?
Yeah, but where were the long lines?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I mean, but it's just, you know, that shit was all over TV for the whole world to see. And that is not enthusiasm. That's voter suppression.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And
because
see,
it's only happening in low-income minority areas.
Right. And there is a trend to look for, to watch for in coming years. If they could possibly get away with it by 14, they would. They want to have it in place by 16. This was voiced both in Pennsylvania and now in Ohio, that they want to proportionalize their electoral votes along congressional district lines. So instead of a winner-take-all system, you would have to win congressional districts in order to get the vote. In other words, the way it broke this time through, if Husted had his way, Ohio would have gone 12 electoral votes for Romney, 6 for Obama.
Well, I mean, if anything was sort of, because I was trying to tell a friend that lives overseas is that, you know, they didn't really understand the voting system, and when I sort of spelled it out that, well, you have protection for voting for certain groups like minorities and women in the Constitution, but there's no federal law dictating how the voting should happen. So you have it state by state, and it's just a complete nightmare. And this person was just had no idea that the system was that fragmented. So I think people are really, you know, I mean, why would they be concerned? But people just assume that the voting is taken care of in the quote greatest democracy on earth, but it's not.
Well, it's not a democracy at all, And even if it was vaguely Democratic, there ain't nothing great about it.
Well, no, I'm just, I mean, you couldn't see, but I had quotes going, you know, quotes going on when I said that. And, you know, but this is the sort of, but it's so apparent, you know, that people came out, because the turnout was quite high overall. And, you know, for minorities, certainly the black community, a lot of that was Obama, but a lot of it was because, oh no, you're trying to take our right to vote. We're going to, you know, go ahead and exercise it. So it kind of backfired on the Republicans in some sense.
Well, I have a question, Sandra, and I don't know what the answer to it is, and I don't want to be taken wrongly for the intent of my asking. But in 2016, what becomes of the African American community's vote? Because if they voter suppression efforts continue as they continued in this voting cycle, and there isn't a historic or whatever figure you want to refer to Barack Obama as, let's say it's Joe Biden, does the African American community get as worked up?
Well, this is, you know, been my whole argument, you know, like a year and a half into the Obama era, is the black agency. You know, before Obama, historically, blacks voted at a much higher rate, disproportionately speaking. And I shudder to think what is going to happen to, you know, the potency of the black movement in general, let alone just the voting component. So I can't tell you. I don't know.
It should be troubling to anybody who's out there trying to do the math. And, you know, the one saving grace as far as the Hispanic vote is concerned is that we can count on the right wing not to do the outreach that they might otherwise do. They will not listen to Jebby Bush, who has been howling about this. They're not going to listen to Lindsey Graham, because the people that you've got to appease in order to get nominated will hear none of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they just listening to the after election gibberish from them, you know, I mean, it's just funny because they are really in a sort of sealed bubble. It's incredible.
And they have, it's kind of interesting because it was a couple of weeks ago when Professor Keith and Dr. Bill were talking about Plato's analogy of the cave. The hardcore of the Republican diehard faithful really are in Plato's cave, aren't they? They have no idea of the existence, you know, we tend to call it a bubble, but they have no idea of the existence of an independent reality that isn't filtered through the shadows that are projected on the wall of the cave.
And even when somebody comes in like Jeb Bush yelling at them after seeing the light, they still don't believe that bitch.
No.
Right, I know.
And if Marco Rubio tries to tell them about it, they'll say, well, that's just because he wants to lead America to diminish our, you know, that goofy get off my lawn screams at clouds kind of thing that they've got going on.
Well, any of them that escapes the cave, they might as well just keep walking. They can't go back in.
No, and you get the idea that Jebby has been out and
all right.
You know, if anything. Nobody's ever going to accuse the Bushes of being some sort of wishy-washy, might switch to Democrat. They've been Republicans since 1860,
right.
And they're going to continue to be Republicans. But no, when Bush, you know, for what he said, Jeb, for all that I've said about how, you know, we know he wants to be president, blah 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 blah. Even though he's got a Latina wife and his children are half Hispanic, that ain't going to cut it. So they're either going to have to cut loose and compete, and I guess that leaves the angry white men to go and vote libertarian, which is fine by me because it just further fragments the party. or else, you know, they continue to lose on a presidential level. But for me, Sandra, the more important question, the more disturbing question is, how do you have that kind of excitement for a presidential candidate and there be, and I'm not going to say no coattails, because, you know, we held our own in the Senate and picked up a couple of seats, but that was a matter, again, of them shooting themselves in the foot. That was not the dynamics of brilliant electoral politics.
Are you talking about the Democrats? Or
well, no, I mean, you know, the Mauerdach out of Indiana and Aiken in Missouri were on the way to victory.
Yeah, oh, no, no, definitely. But, I mean, my main concern now, though, I mean, all the sort of, you know, before we pronounce them, don't forget, my biggest worry about the possibility of the Republicans regaining a foothold is if the Democrats decide to bail on the New Deal. That's going to destroy the party, just as sure as what the Republicans are doing to themselves now.
And that's one of those...
If the Democrats decide to take the grand bargain, it's going to be some irreparable damage going on. I believe that.
And that's one of those stay the hell home moments in 2016, and that means that we don't solve other problems.
Right. That's why I'm you know, really not you know, a bit worried about Obama. But the other upside is, though, whereas he doesn't have to face an election, a lot of Democrats will. So I don't know how willing they're going to be to go along with his destroy the New Deal legacy fantasy. So we'll see. He may get the same treatment that Bush got, you know, when he had his mandate with 20,000 votes winning in 2005.
Right. That's why I mentioned the down ballot bloodbath here in West Virginia. If I was a Democrat and I had just gotten my ass handed to me because of the adverse reaction to Barack Obama, I'd be pretty unhappy with my party. Because it's pretty obvious that it was all every man or every person for him or herself in this state. Because again, you wind up with the anti-Obama governor winning. You wind up with the anti-Obama the junior senator winning, you wind up with the anti-Obama Democratic congressman winning, and everybody else takes a whipping. And I mean just about everybody else.
No, it's true, but, you know, but there were some other really interesting things going on, because if you want to, if I may drift to an international situation, I mean, based on what happened here, those two states that said, oh yeah, we're gonna regulate pot and make it like alcohol, is giving the Mexican government great ideas. They're like, fantastic, because the cartels stand to lose just millions just by two states, Bob, making it a legal substance. And the government of Mexico is more than happy for this state-by-state action to happen, because it completely, it can nullify the nightmare that has become the narco state of Mexico. I mean, there's big implications of this, making pot legal and decriminalizing drugs in America, worldwide. I mean, that right there was a really, really good thing to have happened in this election.
Do you think then that, I mean, a similar referendum went down in defeat in California, right, a couple of years ago?
Well, yeah. But if you just understand the implications that two states caused the government of Mexico to sit up and think, wow, this can sort of diminish our nightmare. I don't know. I just thought that.
No, I think it can't help. It can't help but have a cross-border effect, and a positive one. Mexico doesn't want to be the way Mexico is.
No.
It is entirely the way it is because of that old Porfirio Diaz question. You know, poor Mexico, so far from God, so near to the United States. We drive that. You know, for all that the Republicans howl about, fast and furious, and talk about what a failed state Mexico is, they will damn sure never admit that it is a direct and proximate function of the prohibition on cannabis.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, because I think this is uncharted territory, you know, again. It's not how the, Holder's Department of Justice is going to handle this. Now, Obama can get in front of the parade on this and increase his popularity even more. We'll see. Because I think, it's disgraceful that Obama hasn't even attempted to address the war on drugs / the war on minorities / black people. And this might be a way for him to, you know, take a bite out of that madness. We'll see. So many opportunities for him here. And I don't think he's up to it. That's my biggest concern. Sorry.
Well, the analysis that I would like to see, Sandra, and I haven't seen it, I actually went looking for it, is how if we take as read that the Boehner House is going to be the Boehner House and that Mitch McConnell is going to continue to rule the Senate because Harry Reid lets him, then I think the ultimate question on any of these topics is, what can Barack Obama do via executive order? You know, when
realize that he's pardoned the fewest, like, in the history of the presidency?
Yeah, yeah.
What's that about?
I think it's about the paralyzing fear that he has of being seen as some sort of radical Marxist.
I guess. I just think he's deeply conservative.
But if you think back, I think he is too. But if you think back, for instance, to the Truman administration, Truman, you know, he doesn't get the credit that he deserves for trying to do something in 1948, for Christ's sakes.
What, the health care thing?
About health care and,
yeah, of course.
And about civil rights. You know, Dr. King would never have risen to prominence and we wouldn't have half of the history that we do had what Harry Truman wanted been put through in the late 1940s. But he had a Congress that he could do absolutely nothing with.
No, but he desegregated the military and he desegregated the civil service.
Which is precisely my point. He did what he could do via executive order and told the Congress to go pound sand.
No, but we don't have that situation here. I'll give you a quick example. Obama, through the health department, Human Health and Services, could have allowed 15, 14-year-olds to buy Plan B over the counter. What did he do, Bob?
Oh, bailed.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. That is like something he could have done, didn't need nobody but himself to do it, and he didn't. So I use that as a measure when people are going on and on about, he's, you know, pro-woman. I'm like, well, I don't know about that, because if a 15-year-old can't take care of herself in that manner because some asshole says, I have daughters, so no, fuck him. Sorry.
No. but I think we are at least beginning the inquiry into the question of how many solutions can be had without the participation of the Congress. And I think that inquiry must be had, Sandra. The willingness of the president is another thing. But if we out here as the so-called grassroots are going to advocate for this or that or the other thing, then we've got to have an understanding of what we can advocate for him to do without a Congress.
Oh no, I understand it. And you know, I'm sort of in line with the Bill McKibbins of the world, who are like, yeah, okay, great, and organizing mass protest right away. I think he has something coming up fairly soon. And, I think there's a lot of organizing around this grand bargain. So I do think there's a lot of people who, aren't fooled anymore. So, I don't mean to come across super negative. I'm not.
No. And I don't think you are.
People need to stay focused,
We've got to be realistic. But, what a damn shame that none of those folks are listening. But the OFA people and the Democracy for America people and the Progressive Democrats of America people, I don't know what they can mobilize or the Move On folks. I don't know who can mobilize what, But to the extent that we are in charge of our destiny at all, I hope the hell that they are I hope somebody's planning on being on the Capitol, on being on the Capitol lawn with 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50,000 people. Because,
well, yeah.
Because I go back to what I said. We can do that right now. The other side can't. The other side is off in a corner sucking its thumb.
No, and after 2 years, you know, he's truly a lame duck. I would say he has a good 18 months. And then it's, you know, it's the second term of the president. No one's going to listen to him, especially his own party, because they have to consider their own political fortunes. So he has a small window before he, I don't know, gets lost in the Middle East peace process or whatever the hell presidents do when it's time to go away, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like I said last night, he's already got some miles on him because of the campaign. This is a lame duck session of Congress. Why not go out and crisscross the country?
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I don't mean to just assume the worst. I'm just sort of, I'm not feeling the, you know, all the sort of, you know, the progressives. They need to either hit hard their members of Congress to remind them what's at stake. That they're going to have to go against this president if he's going to attack the safety net. Because raising the age limit or, you know, means testing any of these social insurance programs, that is unacceptable. And there is no equivalency of raising the taxes a few percentage points on these assholes and taking benefits away from old, sick, and poor people. There's no equivalence there. And if the progressives allow Obama to frame it that way, well, shame on
them. It's fairly breaking news. You know, we thought a couple of weeks ago that the Supreme Court had said that they were going to take a powder on looking at the Voting Rights Act. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, guess what?
What are they looking at? Five? Section five?
No, they've changed their tune. The SCOTUS blog, Lyle Dennison writing, posted this afternoon at 3 p.m. Dennison writes, acting 3 days after the nation's minority voters showed that they have increased and still growing power in U.S. elections, the Supreme Court agreed on Friday to rule on a challenge to Congress's power to protect those groups' rights at the polls. The court said it would hear claims that Congress went beyond its authority when it extended for another 25 years the nation's most important civil rights law, the Voting Rights Act, originally passed in 1965. Specifically at issue is the constitutionality of Section 5, exactly what you said.
Okay, so let me get this straight. They saw Citizens United in action, and they saw that, oh, it didn't work as well as they wanted to, so now they're just going to go straight up and attack the vote. Wow, I don't even know what to say about that. They saw too many brown people voting no matter what, so they're going to have to put a stop to that. Is that what you're telling me?
That is exactly what I'm telling you.
I have to look that one up. But, yeah, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's scotusblog.com, and it should be pretty near the top.
Because all them freaks woke up and they thought, oh, my God, the Negro is still here? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. What do we got to do to make these people stop wanting to vote?
Right. No, I shouldn't laugh. That's really disturbing. But, well, like I said, I don't mean to keep tooting, you know, because California has lots of problems. But California expanded the right to vote. It didn't contract. Because next year, you'll be able to register and vote on the same damn day, Bob.
Well, hallelujah.
But you know what? That's what you get when you have a one-party state. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and you know, where did it come from? That was beautiful watching Mary Bono Mack go down in flames at the same day that her husband did over in Florida.
Well, you know, Lundgren, he's going down because this Vera person is now like 1,700 votes ahead. So we may be saying goodbye to that fool. He's hideous.
Now,
Dan Lundgren.
Now, he did just awful.
No, he's losing at this moment, so he might be going bye-bye.
And yet on the other end of the country, it is worth noting that Alan West is refusing to go quietly or gracefully. I guess that should come as no surprise.
I'm not surprised by that. But yeah. Somebody denied him, a court denied him, and he's going to another court now, I heard.
Okay, I must have missed that in the afternoon. I was just reading the update from Brad Friedman earlier today.
Well, I just saw some court said no to him, and he was now going to some other court or something.
Yeah, because he's asking for the voting machines to be impounded.
Right.
And, you know, I find it interesting that all of a sudden now he's interested in voting machines.
And all of a sudden, that asshat is going to get access to proprietary information? Well, how's that?
Right. Won't that be interesting?
Yeah, no, it's always a different set of rules for them and something else for us. And I'm really disturbed now. I'm just thinking about that Supreme Court. Wow. I mean, they're so transparent. It's just idiots. So Harry Reid, we got to depend on him to loosen up, at least take the first part of that filibuster where, because they're able to filibuster twice on a bill, which I didn't know.
Yeah, they can filibuster procedurally on a
right.
Cloture motion,
and then they can do it again.
Right.
So he's talking about getting rid of at least that that first part. But I'll believe it when I see it. In fact, I would love for him to not be leader. Someone else, please.
Yeah. Now Benedict in the chat room, who I think was, I think this is a little bit cynical, but maybe it's true. He said, Harry Reid doesn't let Mitch McConnell do anything. Harry Reid does what Obama tells him to, and Obama does not want a favorable Congress.
Well, this is why I'm saying that the people in the, at least, especially the House, when they're facing re-election, you know, may have a really good reason to go against Obama if they're pressured enough.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to get it through my thick skull, Sandra, how it is that, and this is cynical in its own right, how is it that if Barack Obama, and you know, he's having this big meeting next week with everybody who's anybody.
Right, that's the first thing that's disturbing.
The Republicans will get filet mignon and the Democrats will get beans and Kool-Aid.
And styrofoam.
And styrofoam cups, damn right. But they're going to have this big meeting next week, and if he looks at John Boehner and says, listen, we're going to let the Bush tax cuts die, and in return, I'm going to give you your fondest wish. We are gonna F Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security sideways. Now, if you're a Republican, how do you walk away from that?
Well, I thought that's pretty much what he did before, and Boehner walked away.
Well, it is, and that's what I don't understand. It has been their fondest hope, their deepest desire, their wildest wish.
Well, because you know, Obama is in a fantasy world if he thinks that that is something that you know. I just think when you have internal and external polling that is hitting 90% every day, all day, for those social insurance programs. I don't know what bubble Obama's in, you know, but it is just a wrong-headed prescription for our problems.
Well, and you know, I think you and Jim are in a certain degree of agreement, because Jim just said, if you think that Republicans will not do anything to reinvent themselves in 12 or 16, you're mistaken. They will do what is necessary, advantaging their cause, using cracks in the armor of the New Deal as practiced today. They're in control still. And the question, yeah, they're in control of the House, which means that they, you know, they control the purse strings. They are at loggerheads, or at least titularly at loggerheads, with a so-called Democratic Senate that one is left to wonder how Democratic it is. And look, we cave. I mean, I heard a profile as I was in a mad dash to get home. I was in DMV hell all afternoon, Sandra. I mean, I've heard stories of the DMV in California. Apparently, it's a spreading disease because it's hell over here too.
Yes, but wait a minute. If you go on Friday at around 4, it's a breeze because everybody still thinks that it's closed on Friday. Anyway.
Oh, beautiful. Well, yeah. Everybody knows that it's open on Friday here, and everybody also knows that it ain't open on Saturday. So anyway, I was in hell there, but on the way back, I listened to a little interview with the incoming senator, the incoming much ballyhooed Democratic senator from North Dakota. And I don't know why they decided to broach this subject, but it became abundantly apparent that that woman is a big fan. I don't mean tepid. I don't mean moderate. I don't mean likes it a lot. I mean a huge fan of the tar sands pipeline. You know, the toxic waste sludge line from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
That's a Democrat, Sandra.
Well, that's going to be probably pretty close to the top of the list in next year too, right? Trying to get that okayed.
Right. And what I'm getting at by bringing that up is that when you talk about a grand bargain, it ain't just Social Security. It ain't just Medicare or Medicaid or the deficit or whether we overhaul the tax code or let the Bush tax cuts expire. If I don't have enough Merlot to get there, mind you, but if I was John Boehner, I'd put everything on the table. How bad do you want it? We want the damn pipeline.
Well, no, but don't even put that out there in the Cosmo, because I just don't trust, you know, our austere leader. I just think, you know, I who knows? But since you mentioned that, I have to ask, have you seen these projections now? I don't mean to go into Armageddon, but they're projecting an increase of 6 degrees at the end of this in 100 years now.
Yeah, that's 6 degrees.
The world.
And that's 6 degrees Celsius.
No, but that's the end, isn't it?
I don't think we can evolve that fast.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that when you have all these God botherers talking about Jesus coming back, I'm like, no, fool. You can just look at some fucking, you know, climate change, and that'll be your God coming back. Because that sounds really frightening to me.
Yeah, it is.
I was like, okay, we're talking, let's see. Simone and Sophia are 10. They could easily be 90. You see what I'm saying about this now?
Yes,
you
I do.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've got...
Okay.
Sandra, I got a grandson who's 3. Okay, so, yeah. He and his big sister, who's 5, are going to get to deal with this.
Well, because they're talking... I mean, I was looking at what they said, the sort of things that will go on when it's at 5. And I'm thinking, oh, dear God. I mean, and everyone's now saying that their models from 20 years ago were severely underestimating...
They were conservative. They were trying not to terrify people back then.
But what's going on right now is something they have projected to be going on 50 years from now, Mom.
Precisely.
So, anyway, I don't mean that I have to go. I don't mean to end it on that note, but I was just thinking, oh my, you know, it's just doing my head in the sort of, it just sounds really horrifying. I don't know.
Well, it already, and I don't want to keep you any longer than you got to be, but it's already horrifying. You know, the Maldives are half underwater. We're losing islands. New York just got day after tomorrowed.
No, and they're saying that all those cities, that's just going to be abandoned and gone. But speaking of that, right quick, there are still these housing projects. This is day 11. No power, no water, no heat.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. How long is that supposed to go on for? Just wondering.
I got no answer. It shouldn't. But they've got the tunnels pumped out.
Well, yeah, I mean of course.
And, I mean that's me being a little bit of a smartass.
No, I mean, and it's and you know, if you're not going to wall all of the possible flooding, then you're going to have to explain to the people that they need to leave and relocate them. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. How do you move an entire city 60 feet back from the shoreline?
Right, but they don't seem to be any sort of effort to even get the power back on.
Right, and you know, if you go a few hundred miles south to a place like Miami, guess who is sitting on the land that doesn't flood? Hint, it ain't the 1%. Because they build it right down to the shoreline. Some of the better flood protected areas in the greater Miami area are places that have slums, tenements, public housing on them. Guess who's going to lose there? I mean, we've only got one way of dealing with this stuff, and it's the same way we dealt with the American Indian.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, what about the Keys? I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, all the amazing sort of coastal towns. You know, and the other thing about this, and then I really do have to go. I mean, do you believe that the insurance companies are trying to go to court to make the National Weather Service change it from a tropical storm to a hurricane for Sandy?
Jesus, no. What?
Because they're going to have to pay out, because the insurance companies have to pay a huge amount if it's deemed a tropical storm as opposed to a hurricane. And so they're trying to get them to say it was a hurricane.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
So I have to send you the article because it's fascinating. It's like, oh, wait, oh, okay, so.
Yeah, because you can make a judge determine that. Wait, I thought, you know, right-wing insurance company, Sandra, I thought they were against judicial activism.
Oh, no. No, the whole thing is just absurd, but it's interesting because it's the difference between one or $20 billion payout because as a claimant, you can just say, well, no, the clause for the hurricane doesn't apply, so you got to pay up. And so the insurance companies are freaking out. But they said, okay, they would insure these low-lying areas, so go out of business. That's capitalism, isn't it?
Right. I mean, isn't that how the free market works? Exactly. Well, I'm sorry to have kept you on so long, but I enjoyed our conversation, Sam.
Oh, yeah,
have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. Jesus, I'd missed that story. Of course, there are those of us who are a little more familiar with that from the Gulf Coast standpoint. Long time ago, insurers said, listen, you want to live down on the shore, you do it without coverage, okay? Now, what that means ultimately is that, you know, if you have to take out a mortgage in order to build your little bungalow by the sea, well, the bank is not going to insure, or the bank is not going to lend on something that you, in turn, cannot insure. So what does that mean? It's a sort of reverse gentrification where the only people who can afford to build by the shore are the people who can afford to have their shit blown away and just go back and rebuild. Or maybe have FEMA do it for them. Ultimately, that's what you're going to see. That everybody who get, more and more, you're going to see that the people who get blown away by hurricanes and then holler Lord, Lord for the federal government to come, for the federal government that they despise in the first place to come and help them are free millionaires who were able to build there because they didn't have to go and borrow money to do it. Interesting, huh? To the phones. 304-658-3333 is the number. It is Friday on the front porch. It's about 24 minutes past the hour. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, there it is.
There you are.
Exactly. You're talking about the shoreline. There's a book out called Ice, and it deals with the glaciers and the impending flooding of the shoreline of our country. And we're not talking about 60 feet.
No, no.
We're talking about a hell of a lot more than that.
We're talking about beachfront property in Beckley, Jim.
Are you right?
I mean, can you imagine it, as the climate changes, you know, some of us sat here worrying during the blizzard about, you know, what happens at the Brushy Fork impoundment, what happens at the Shoemate Dam.
Well, that's true, and there's a lot of toxic stuff behind those, and we've talked about that.
Well, when those things overtop, it's game over.
Well, then it's going to be game over if that happens. That's all there is to it, and what's being done to stop it?
Not a damned thing.
No, and what is being done to repair infrastructure that I've been harping on for how many years?
Oh, I know. Part of me driving back was getting to listen to a little bit more of National Petroleum Radio and a conversation they had between a city functionary in New York and I think it was a lieutenant colonel from the Army Corps of Engineers, and they were, well, what do you do to fix this? And the Corps of Engineers guy said, well, you know, we noticed that we had dry ground behind where we put sandbags, maybe something more permanent like that. But if that is the extent of the forward thinking, then, you know, congratulations, New York, you're going to get another one. And I'm not trying to be an asshole about this, Jim.
Well, I understand that, and that particular colonel at the Corps of Engineers could only say what he was allowed to say. That's it. You know, Bob, I can remember back when Bill Clinton ran for president, and back in 92, and they published this book about what they were going to do. And one of the first things they wanted to do was to abolish the Corps of Engineers or privatize it.
Jesus.
Yeah. I remember those days, too. So there's a lot of blame to go around for a lot of people, that's for damn sure.
Well, and where the Corps of Engineers is concerned, anybody who's involved in the kind of grassroots advocacy that I'm involved in is not and has not, I don't think, ever been a member of the Corps of Engineers fan club, because they're the ones who rubber-stamped things like the construction of these valley fills and these massive dirt and rubble dams that hold back billions of gallons of toxic waste.
Yeah, the trouble is, these people were given their marching orders from somebody else much higher in authority.
Oh, sure, because,
just do this and just do that and do enough to ameliorate the existing condition and
maintain status quo, Andy.
Let's just hope it'll work, and if it doesn't work, oh, well.
Isn't it funny that that used to be the most prestigious arm of the American military?
What, the Corps of Engineers?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely had their presence as far as hierarchy.
Well, I mean, Lee, if you graduated high enough from West Point, you got your choice of dispositions, and, you know, Lee was sent to the engine. Anybody who wanted to have a career in the military got sent to the Corps of Engineers, or requested the Corps of Engineers.
Well, of course, that's because it was very, number one, engineering is a very learned profession. My father was an engineer. I understand exactly, you know, what he had to go through to get his experience in that type of academic discipline.
Well, going back to the days of Caesar, it was the ability to build siege engines and breastworks and things like that that had a great deal to do with whether or not you were successful on the battlefield. You know, Lee himself was referred to as Granny Lee or the King of Spades, because as soon as he got control of the Army of Northern Virginia, he had his soldiers start digging.
Right,
but now it's practically an administrative agency that tries to either do the bidding of industry or forestall disaster. You know, it was the Corps of Engineers and the budget cuts that Katrina did not. Katrina itself, the storm itself, did not cause the miseries in the lower Ninth Ward. It was the failure of the levees and the overtopping of the levees. And those levees were failed and were overtopped as a result of failures by the Army Corps of Engineers. I remember it very well.
Mm-hmm. Those levees weren't strong enough, high enough, and they didn't work. And I have seen studies from the Corps of Engineers pre-Katrina warning people this will take a Category 3. At best.
But not a 4 and not a 5.
Exactly. And, you know, people have been told this. And, for example, why weren't those flood walls or sea walls in New York built 3 or 4 feet higher?
Well, this storm has been warned about, too. But we live in a country, Jim, where the notion of infrastructure, the notion of doing the hard business of maintaining civilization is not priority work.
No, it's not. It's about other things that are when a disaster strikes, all of a sudden become...
Yeah, when all of, you know, when great humongous amounts of our budget go into, well, it's like that German author I read the other night. You know, this is a country that is going to get to the point where it can strike anywhere on the earth within 20 minutes, but can't keep the water out of its streets.
Yeah, it can't defend itself because there are much greater enemies than, you know, the ones perceived and, you know, national defense plans. We're talking about nature itself. And, of course, there are some people who take the attitude, well, there's nothing we can do about that. And that's the attitude. But, I mean, as far as New York is concerned, I mean, it's a pretty miserable place up there in New Jersey tonight because you've got people up there who are still without power. There are no power boxes being imported into those areas to try to restore electrical services. And there are people whose homes have been 4 feet underwater. I mean, Queens isn't that far from New York City.
No.
It's a borough of New York City.
You know, growing up where I grew up and in the time that I grew up, about as much as I knew about Queens was the opening footage segments every week of All in the Family. You know, that drive down the street there with Edith singing in the background.
Yeah. And ironically enough, it was the site at Flushing Meadows of the 1939 World's Fair, The World of Tomorrow.
And I saw a photograph yesterday of entire neighborhoods just burnt to the ground. And I thought, my God. And again, this is New York City. This is America. And we have crossed some sort of invisible line, Jim. And I don't know if, I don't know if we can redraw that line. And I don't know if I don't even know if we have the will to talk about the fact that the line was there and we crossed it. Because we damn sure can't talk about climate change. Maybe we can now. You know, not that much time has passed, but you know what Sandra said about, public housing. You know, 11 days now. No power, no water, no heat. And apparently no urgency either.
Right. And where she lives, I think it's in Sacramento, is in, it's in much danger, if not more danger, than New Orleans. You think of what an earthquake could do up there, in Sacramento.
Yeah, because of the river.
Exactly. I mean, you know, so much money has been misspent in higher circles and not protecting our own country.
Well, look at what this this last election cycle cost, and I'll say cost us because every day there was some sort of, can you send $3? Can you send $5? And that's the new model.
Oh yeah.
And you know the most conservative estimate that I saw, Jim, was it cost $6 billion.
Oh, I heard too. I don't know. It was a billion a piece. Maybe they were trying to slice it.
Well, I think this was everybody and everything.
Well, my Lord. I received a call from Rod Parsley the other day.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to contribute $30 or $60 to the relief of the people in New Jersey and the outlying areas. And I thought to myself for a second, who? Rod Parsley? I said, the guy on TV? Oh, yes. And I said, 30 or 60. Now, how much is this going to go to relief? And how much is this going to go to your program and other things that you are supporting?
Did you get an answer?
Sir, do you not want to contribute $60 or $30 to the relief of these people? And I said, ma'am, I already have. Thank you. Have a good day. And I just wondered exactly how much of that money was going to be contributed.
Well, understand, Jim, if Rod Parsley's out there, I didn't know about Rod Parsley. I mean, he's a flim-flam man of the first order. The Pat Robertson's bunch is already out there, the huckstering up money off of this misery. And so, too, is Billy Graham's son, Franklin. You know, Samaritan's Purse.
Yeah, you have Operation Blessing and Samaritan's Purse. And, you know, I'm not trying to denigrate these programs or whatever, but I'm just wondering how much of a buck they're trying to make on it.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing. This you know, the
I mean, there was a time in my life, Bob, excuse me, I don't mean to overtalk you, but there was a time in my life when I was insecure. But after having seen what some of these people represent and how they have become such an industry in their own right, it's just called...
Well, I remember during Katrina, Jim. I remember during Katrina when...
An asshole.
Yeah.
I mean, and, I thought to myself after I got off the phone, I said, you know, was I right or was I wrong? And it just cauterizes you and hardens your heart. I mean, I would like to see money going directly into relief without these administrative costs of people who are trying to take advantage of a good advantage in their own rights of a very bad situation. Not bad. That doesn't even describe it. I mean, these people are living in absolute hell and horror. And on CNN this morning, they had this lady, she was very articulate, who lived in Queens or who lived in that area. And she was just explaining what they need. And she said, we are not getting the help that we desperately need. And it's getting cold up there. Those people are living in homes that are still...
No heat, no water, no electric.
Nothing, nothing. They're living in, like, Berlin, 1945. Because the effect is absolutely the same.
Sure.
And I just cannot understand why our government cannot be as more proactive. Well, I can too.
Well, some of this is the difference between local, state, and federal. At one point in the last week, Mayor Bloomberg started pissing and moaning about how things were going and trying to blame the Red Cross. And the Red Cross pointed out that things were going according to a plan that was put in place because of procedures that the Mayor Bloomberg's office insisted upon.
I know. And 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I saw this animated program about this country being besieged by natural disasters. And they predicted everything that has come to pass about earthquakes, floods, superstorms, the efforts to protect New York, the way Amsterdam has been protected by some type of floodgate. But even
the polder system.
Yeah, that was even overcome. And people don't pay attention to that stuff. They think it's science fiction. They think it's just like something out of Disney World or whatever. But it's not. It's total reality. And in this book called Ice, this guy this morning just explained in flawless logic how the glaciers had been melted. There will be no glacier park. And he was pointing out the fact that there are industrialists who want to see that happen because they can get up there
and drill in it.
And drill in it. Exactly.
To get more hydrocarbons to heat the planet up some more.
Right.
Like this Heidi Heitkamp or whatever her name is from North Dakota. Again, ballyhooed because, you know, we kept the Senate in Democratic hands. And yet, as a Democrat, she's a huge fan of the tar sands toxic waste pipe.
I thought to myself, what do they wish to make the world? Some gigantic Titanic and not, you know, take proactive measures and not raise the bulkheads above E-deck or not provide enough lifeboats?
Well, that's where we are now, Jim. I mean, if you take the long view, and I know you're very good at that.
I try to.
Consider, if you will, the history of human habitation of this planet. If you were a part of a human civilization in past and going back to the pretty much the dawn of what we recognize as human about 100,000 years ago, if the numbers I learned years ago are still correct, our tendency was to live by the shore. And we did that because it provided a ready source of food, shellfish, fish, what have you, to maintain a pretty abundant diet for hunter-gatherer peoples.
And not only that, but, you know, as we progressed, water for canals, irrigation.
Sure. And so if you consider the archaeological history of the world, there is almost no estimating the number of sites where we would have greater understanding of our ancient forebears. There's no estimating the number of them that are already underwater because of the melting that happened when the last glaciers receded at the end of the last ice age.
Well, that's true.
And so if we can understand that long view, Jim, then we also understand that there is going to come a time, if the planet continues to heat, if the glaciers continue to melt, if the polar ice caps thaw and don't refreeze, if the Antarctic ice shelf continues to calve off.
I mean, Bob, look.
When New York, Boston, New Orleans, San Francisco, San Diego, Seattle, Vancouver, London up the Thames Estuary.
Of course.
The population centers of this world, Jim, are still on the shoreline just as the communities were when we first learned to think about community.
I mean, the ice caps have a function other than to look pretty. They reflect heat from the sun.
Yeah.
And, of course, when that heat is no longer reflected, the water is warmed, and we have all kinds of consequences because of excessive warming of tidal currents and flows and things of that nature. It's not a good thing to look at, but it was...
Well, consider a largely desalinated ocean.
Well, of course, a desalinated ocean is not going to carry heat up to the UK and Northern Europe, and there will be another ice age there, and there will be no... It's going to be like that that film you mentioned with Jake Gyllenhaal. It's going to be like that situation.
But it will be what's interesting is it will be an iceless ice age. It will just get brutally and damnably and unbearably cold because the planet is still going to be warm.
Yeah, that's true, because we've got a lot of heat coming from inside this planet in the first place and a lot of sun that's being beamed upon it with no ice to reflect those rays of heat. And, you know, I know this is Friday on the front porch. I wish we could end this week on a better note, happier note, but, well, there it is, and there you have it, and that's all I got to say.
Well, Jim, you have yourself a good weekend.
By the way, I could tell that you've been somewhere today. You didn't feel well. If you went to the DMV, good fucking luck.
Place is a zoo. I mean, I'm nearly fit. I got my camera card to go and get my license re-upped, Jim. And I wasn't thinking about it. I had other errands to run there, and I had the right paperwork for that. But I didn't think about needing to take my birth certificate, my passport, my voter registration card, and my social security card with me.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, there it was.
Documents being said, the best thing you can do is be there at 0700 outside the door, or you're going to be there for a while.
Yeah. Well, it was a camp out, and just
and I'm sure
breezed into the studio here about 30 minutes before showtime, and that sucks.
Hey, I could tell. Well, listen, you have a good weekend yourself, and good luck with the DMV next time.
Yeah, I got to go back.
You do?
Oh yeah, I've got to remember my passport and my birth certificate and the record of the number of times my mother clipped her toenails and, you know, all of that, you know, paranoid bullshit you've got to go through to get a license in this state now. Because right-wing national security paranoia infects this place as much or more than any other.
Well, let me ask you this. I went last year, and I didn't have to present all that stuff.
You're going to next time.
And you have to have your birth certificate?
Yep, birth certificate, two forms of ID, proof of your address. Yeah, oh, it's silly.
Oh, well. Okay, well, listen, have a good weekend. Thank you.
All right, you take care, Jim. Our buddy Jim. Hope you all have a nice weekend. It's about a quarter before the hour. I don't know where to go next. Let's see. Turlock, California. You know the extent of my knowledge of Turlock, California? Right to Medic Alert. Turlock, California. That's it. But apparently there's someone in Turlock, California by the name of Denise Helms. And she is apparently one pissed off right winger. That Facebook, it will get you in trouble. She's 22 years old, Denise Helms of Turlock. And on her Facebook, yesterday, she posted the following. And another 4 years of the N-word. Maybe he'll get assassinated this term. That's how sick these people are. After her comment went viral, and I'm sure there are a whole bunch of, hell yeah! She was interviewed. And she went on writing on her Facebook page.
Apparently a lot of people in Sacramento think I'm crazy and racist. Wow is all I got to say. I'm not racist and I'm not crazy. Just simply stating my opinion.
You know, her opinion that maybe he will get assassinated this term. She did try to clear things up a little bit with Fox 40. Naturally, it was Fox that went out to interview her.
She said, I'm not saying like I would go do that or anything like that, you know, by any means. But if it was to happen, I don't think I'd care one bit.
Understanding precisely nothing about the first law of Hulls, Fox 40 went ahead and asked her whether she, quote, equated the president with the N-word. And Denise Helms said, sure. Apparently 22-year-old Denise Helms worked at the Turlock Cold Stone Creamery store. Chris Kegel is the store director. He fired her on the spot. We found her comments to be very disgusting, and they do not reflect our opinions here. The Secret Service is reviewing the comments, and I say again, that because I don't like to see any presidents assassinated, I would suggest that whatever the contingent is that is dedicated to protecting the life of the current president of the United States, it be doubled, if not trebled. Renegade. Remember, they named him Renegade, and a month later, the Secret Service was caught sending around racist emails.
Simply stating my opinion.
Yeah. It's just an opinion. Marty pointing out in response to something Jim said, in Sacramento, one, they're working on shoring up the levees on the Sacramento River, and two, there isn't a major fault near Sacramento. Marty says, I'd need to check the maps, but I think the nearest fault to this, us is the Hayward Fault, but I reserve the right to be incorrect. No, I reserve that right. Ron in Raleigh says, since so many of our politicians are so hot on outsourcing and privatization, How about we outsource flood control to the Dutch? Never hear about them flooding, even though they're below sea level. Yeah, but the trick with that, Ron, is that that is a system that was put in place based upon community cooperation. And we're incapable of that because of the, what was that stupid woman's name? Of Turlock, California. We can't do that because the polder system is based upon a recognition by person A that they have a vested interest in person B keeping up their dikes, because if person B's dikes fail, then person A gets flooded. I do have that right, don't I? It's the polder system. Why is that? Anyway. We can't do that because we can't cooperate, because you've got Eric, no, my last name, middle name is not Cartman, Dondero out there, who wants to take a big steaming dump on his Democratic neighbor's lawns, because Peter Morrison in Texas wants to secede because he can't stand the idea of being in an always state of being perfected union with, you know, Vermont. I mean, I'm not yelling at you, Ron. You know that. Oh, Andy pointing out, he says, I think Sandra had it a bit backwards. NOAA now calls Sandy a tropical cyclone. The insurers want it called a hurricane because they get a bigger deductible, 1% to 5% of the value of the property on the coverage. Homeowners would have to pay more in construction repairs if it were deemed a hurricane. Standard storm deductibles are much less, a more reasonable $500 to $1,000. Andy pointing out earlier, man, Bob, you sound like a Roosevelt Democrat. How New Deal. That's so old school, Bob, so 20th century. Yeah, I'm trapped in it. I spent most of my time there. God. Horrifying story Sandra sent along out of Virginia, out of Annandale, Virginia. It's a Lulu. Polling places in Annandale, Virginia, there's a Korean population there, a lot of them elderly, many having come to this country as a result of the war. In a news story from Huffington Post, on Election Day, Leo Kim, 34, drove a group of elderly Korean Americans to the polls in Annandale, Virginia, a Washington suburb. They quickly found themselves in a scene out of the Jim Crow era. After presenting proper identification, authorities demanded that the seniors say their names and home addresses out loud in English. A tough proposition for some with limited English skills. The poll workers had made similar demands on other voters. The Korean-American seniors felt bullied, explained Glenn Magpante, Democracy Program Director with the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund. He said multiple voters complained about similar treatment at his office. They all had their IDs. They thought that would help. When poll workers grew frustrated that the seniors didn't understand the instructions, they ordered all the Korean Americans waiting to vote to form a new line. Korean people stand in a separate line, Leo recalled the poll worker calling out to everyone. The group complied. Then they started taking the white voters, Magpante said. The Koreans had to wait. Because, you know, this here is the greatest country in the world. Right? A little background on Turlock, California, coming from Andy. Turlock is part of California's Inland Empire. Agricultural communities, very red, red, red! I concur. Sacramento is out of the fault lines for earthquakes. Folks move from the Bay Area to Sacramento to get away from earthquakes, but the trade-off is possible flooding from a breakdown in the dikes. The American and Sacramento rivers, I thought the American River was involved there somewhere, meet just above Sacramento confluence, so it has been very susceptible to flooding. Got one more story, but you know what? I'm saving that for more in Monday. Because it's just too loony even to wrap up a Friday on the front porch. It just is. So I'll bid you all a good weekend. With a reminder, we have a Prism West Virginia American History chat series tomorrow beginning at 3 Eastern Time, noon Pacific. Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly. If you have never caught one of these, you really should. It will be live on the Horn audio stream that you listen to this program on. It will also be live, there will also be live video at, and you can get that simply by going to prismwv.org, PRISMWV.org, and you'll come away with your mind absolutely expanded. All of the chat sessions for this semester so far are there available for your viewing pleasure at prismwv.org. Catch up. You will be, well, if you have an inclination to figure out how we got here from where, you want to check it out. 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, tomorrow. Prism, West Virginia, American History chat series. I've been watching pretty closely. We didn't bring in any contributions during the program. So we are in a hole come Monday, a bigger hole. About a $350 hole come Monday. That's the way it goes sometimes. This network does exist because of your determined contributions to keep it going. And there are, without a doubt, bills to pay. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the snail mail address, if you prefer to work that way. We did get a couple of contributions overnight helping to match up with Shirley's challenge, so thank you very much for that. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go. Thank you for your calls, your thoughts, your emails, your participation in the chat room. Thank you. This little ongoing experiment and conversation is driven by you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Sparky, the moderator of the Horn Molloy late night Skype chat group at midnight Eastern Time. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Agnes. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ongoing thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. If for some reason you have never gone there and taken action to try to stop mountaintop removal with H.R. 5959, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, there is no better time than the present. If you have written and your representative has not yet responded, write again, email again, call again. Persistence is what will carry the day for the ACE Act. ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Here comes my buddy Rick Smith on the horn. Y'all have a great weekend.